1, 2, 3, 4. Test, test, test. Oh, it's not on tape yet. Testing, 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing.
This is March the 14th, 1983, and I'm in Pinetta, Florida, at the house of Alva Gaston. We're going to be discussing today some of the traditional quilting, Ms. Gaston. So let me ask you just some questions about your background. When were you born?
1907.
And where?
Well, right over here in Lowndes County, Georgia.
Okay.
Near Clarkeville, where the paper mill, you know, the big paper mill that's well known up at Clarkeville. Mm-hmm. I was near Clarkeville.
What were your parents' names?
Well, they were Franklin and Eva.
Okay. And where were they from?
Originally? They were, they were both themselves from Georgia. Now, my father's people had, you know, the next generation behind him had come from the Carolinas. A lot of Gastons in the Carolinas.
Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking today a little bit about your quilting. Could you tell me where you learned your quilting?
Well, I learned it from my mother. We helped her in piecing the quilts and then quilting them. And even we even did our own bats, the filling. If you don't know what I'm talking about, the bats, the filling in the quilts, you know, between the top and the lining, the filling. We even made a lot of our own bats. I looked for and hoped I would find a pair of cotton cards that we used to card the raw cotton, you know, just ginned, the seeds taken out of it and just ginned. And we would, I wish I could explain to you, I hoped I would find them, but I didn't. But they are an oblong piece of wood like this, two of them with a handle down here. And they have a lot of little wires, just little fine, stiff wires. And you take one of them, the other handle in this hand, and the other the handle in this hand, put your little wad of the cotton in there, and you know, and pull it, and it loosens it all up and fixes it in a little. You know, it's according to how much cotton you put in, but usually we make it about that thick. And then when we got the quilt lining in the frames, and you see my frames up here that I keep up there all the time.
Right.
And that's the way we did at home a lot of the time. You know, they were hung from the ceiling. But when we put in the bat, then we'd, I mean the lining, then we'd take these bats and lay them you know, one up on the other, and just a little bit, you know, like this,
right,
until we covered the whole lining. And then we put the top on, basted it down around the edges, and then we quilted, you know, to hold the bat in place.
About how old were you that you remember beginning to do this?
Well, I would say that I was probably in my early teens. I'm pretty sure that that I began to, because I began to help Mama with sewing. She did the sewing for the family, and I began to help her with sewing. I'm sure that we began to piece quilt tops and quilt when I was, I would say, not more than 15 anyway, maybe 14, 15.
When you say we, who are you referring to?
Well, I have five sisters. One of them older than I, and the other four younger. And the we is my mother and the sisters that were old enough to quilt at that time.
So would you all participate together in this?
Most of the time.
What time of year or time of day did you do this most often, do you know?
Well, I'm sure that it had to be in the fall and winter largely, because being a family of largely of girls, we had to do a lot of the farm work. The girls had to do a lot of the farm work. And there was much more to do in the summertime, spring and summer, than in the winter. I can't recall exactly, but I'm pretty sure that we did more of it, you know, in the fall and winter.
Did you continue your quilting after you left your home?
No, there was a long time that I didn't quilt. I was a school teacher. And there was a long time that I didn't quilt. Now, my mother continued to piece quilt tops up until she didn't have the strength, you know, to do it. And then heavy things, I mean, handling heavy pieces like that. And I have a quilt or two that we quilted after her tops, after she got where, you know, that she wasn't really able to do it herself. But there was a period, I would say, of maybe 20 or 30 years that I didn't do much of it. Now, I would do one once in a while when some new pattern had come out that I took a fancy to. I know I made a kaleidoscope one time of it, solid yellow and a blue and white print that I thought was real, real pretty. And that was, I'm sure that was during the time that I was teaching, because I started teaching when I was 20. And I'm sure that I did that. As I said, just now and then I would do some quilting, but not anything like regularly, through a period of maybe about 20 years.
Where did your mother learn to quilt?
From her mother.
Do you remember her quilting with her mother?
No, because we lived far enough from her mother that we never went back except on Sundays, you know, when we'd go to their church and come back and eat dinner with them. So, no, I never saw my grandmother quilting.
Do you remember the quilt patterns that you used when you were quilting with your sisters and mother at home? Were there any patterns that...
Oh, yes, we had a few patterns that I can recall. My memory's getting so bad, I'm not sure whether I get anything like the most important ones. We did, well, the nine patch, and then one that Mama called, I don't know whether anybody else ever did or not, but Mama called save and waste. Just take just little pieces of you know, materials and sew them together into a square. Just sew them to each other, you know, in into a square, and then sew those squares together and make the top. So a good many of them were what she called save and waste, or some people call them string quilts, you know, just pieces that you would buy no pattern, just kind of hit and miss type thing. But I do remember that we did... I think one of the last ones that my mother pieced, you know, by herself, and I quilted after her death, was the Dresden plate. And we had what was called broken stovetop. A bow tie. Did I mention nine patch? Soldier's return. There was a star. I don't know what the name of it was, whether it was called a star, but anyway, the pattern was a star. It made a star. I'm not sure if that was the name of the pattern or not.
Were these patterns... How did you learn to do these patterns? Were they passed down through?
They were passed down, or else someone would take a quilt and a trace off, you know, the design from the quilt, and then cut their own pattern. Mm-hmm. But most of them, they were the patterns were passed on down.
Was there any particular quilt pattern that was a family favorite, or one that maybe was specifically known as your family's pattern?
I wouldn't think so, because most of the quilts that we made were made just out of scraps. We didn't go and purchase materials, you know, to make them by patterns. We just used the scraps that we had. And so much of the time, there wouldn't be enough of the material to make them by any special patterns. So I can't recall that the family had any particular pattern. I think maybe that my mother had, you know, two or three of the Dresden plate tops. And I'm sure that we had several, you know, of the nine patch.
Could you describe the Dresden plate pattern?
Well, I don't know whether I could describe it, where it would be, where anybody could see it or not. It is a circle made of little strips, sort of fan-like, you know, and where they are sewed together and leaves a little hole in the center, and then it's scalloped on the edge, and then that is pieced, those pieces are pieced together to make the circle, and then that is appliqué down onto a square of fabric of the material. That's the best I can do. I could draw a picture, but then that wouldn't show up on here. And I'm not good at descriptions.
No,
but it makes a circle. You mm-hmm. see, it's called a plate.
Right.
And when it's finished, it looks like a scalloped edged plate.
Do you still do that pattern?
I haven't done one. I took my, I was telling you, you know, about my mother's last quilt that she made of the dressing plate. I took it before I quilted it and traced off, you know, and got me a pattern for it and made me a sample to use, thinking that I was going to make one out of, oh, we just have so much, you know, the double knit materials today, that I thought maybe I was going to make me one of double knit, but I haven't gotten around to doing that yet, with some much else going on that I haven't gotten to that.
You mentioned that you had quit quilting for a while, and then you began again. What inspired you to start quilting again?
You know, I'm not real sure, but when I joined this church here, I think some of the ladies, you know, got together and quilted some then, but at the time that I joined, they were not quilting, but not too long after, we got grouped together, you know, and got interested in making quilts and quilting for other people, and we do more of that. We quilt for other people. We've made a few, you know, where special demands. We made one, a flower basket, and right now we're in the process of making a grandmother's flower, grandmother's flower garden. And I really... I can't say just what got me back into it, except for the fact that, you know, that there was a group here that started working at it. And, of course, I just fell right in with them and have been doing it. We work every Tuesday.
How many are in the group?
Well, we have had from 4 to 10. Right now, we regularly don't have but 4 or 5. I wish my mind would work better on, you know, just what did get me back into it. But I'm sure that was the main instigator at getting me back to quilting. And then, of course, when bicentennial was coming up, and I saw in a, I don't remember what magazine it was now, Ladies Home Journal or something, some kind of magazine, this pattern, you know, for the, I believe it was called the Stars and Stripes, red, white, and blue. And I just had the idea I wanted to make me one of those. And so I did buy the material, you know, to make it all of those colors, the red, white, and blue. And I had it on display at the Bicentennial Celebration in Madison, 1976. And I have made another one like it since then, but I sold it. And I have done, quilted several beautiful quilts that is, I've done two of the Lone Star. Just within the last year, quilting for other people. I call it beautiful myself, and a young man came in one day that was coming to pick up my TV, you know, to work on it or bring it back, and he came through while we were working in here. And we had a good bit of it done. One of my other quilters that works with me would come down lots of times on Saturday afternoon and work with me because her husband loved to listen to the wrestling and such as that, and she didn't enjoy it. He'd have the radio, TV on so loud, so she would come down here and quilt with me. And this young boy came through, and he looked at it, and he said, "You know what I would do with that if it belonged to me?" I said, "No." He said, "I'd put it in a museum." He just thought, you know, it was gorgeous, and it was. The lady had the colors just, what it reminded me of is a sunburst, you know, that they have sunburst stuff, different things, you know. And I said, that's what it reminded me of. It was just gorgeous. And I have just enjoyed quilting for other people. I get pleasure out of seeing the beauty of it when it's finished up and giving pleasure to the people that
make it. How do the people give their orders to you? Are they local people or...?
Yes, most of them are local people. Somebody will they will be inquiring around and finding out, you know, who does quilting, and we are pretty well known, you know, within I'd say 25-30 mile radius around here for our quilting, and then when we get more than we can do over there, and they have found out that I will do individual ones. So I have had, you know, several of mine have been by phone. Just somebody call and say, "I hear that you quilt. Would you quilt one for me?" And most of it has been by phone. Now, some people come in person. Had a couple to come from up at Clientville. I was telling you about Clientville. Just a few months ago, you know, and brought theirs, the one that they wanted quilted, and made plans with me to do it for them. So it's different ways, other people's recommendations, and by phone, and by a visit, and then some of what we do, one of the men, as a member of our church over here, works at the bag plant up at ONI, the bag plant. And several of the ladies who have worked there with him have given him orders, you know, to bring to us. And he, when they had finished their top and got the materials ready, he would bring it to us. Then when we would finish it up, he would take the back to them and bring the money to us. So we just work all kinds of ways in doing it, getting more people involved.
Do you have any younger people in the community who come over and learn how to quilt from you?
Well, we have had younger people than we are, to come into the community, you know, and learn from us. We had an English lady. Well, she'd been in the United States a long time, but she still had her English accent. That lived in the community over in the Chair Lake area for several years, and she came to church here. And she got interested, and she'd never seen quilting done, had never done a stitch, but she was interested enough that she started in with us. And it is amusing to see somebody trying it for the first time. You know, they'll poke the needle down like this and reach under and poke it back up instead of stitching along like this. But she soon caught on and became a good quilter. And then we had a preacher's wife about 3-4 years ago who is, I would say she's probably in her 30s, that never had quilted, but she was interested in everything. And she was soon quilting and piecing tops and quilting them herself for her children. I remember those two in particular. And the one that I told you, didn't I tell you that we had one working on one now that if you went over to the church you would see? Did I tell you that?
No, you haven't told me all
that. Well, we have an extra large king size grandmother's flower garden that we have finished quilting and we're binding it now. And the lady that did that, she pieced the top herself, and she has been out and quilted some with us, and she had never quilted before. So we several people, you know, that have learned from just watching us and experimenting and getting the hold of it.
Who are the other women that are quilting with you right now?
Mrs. Vera Sowell, Mrs. Gladys Smith, Mrs. Edna McDonald, Mrs. Jewel Woodard, and up until just a month or two ago, Mrs. Eunice Hedges and Mrs. Irma Corbett. But they have had sickness in their families for several months now and have not quilted any for several weeks, months. Mrs. Gwen Yeomans. I believe those are the ones that, you know, that I have been working recently.
You've been with the group since it started, just about?
Yeah.
Are there any other of those people that have been with it as long as you have?
But yes, Jewel Woodard has. And Edna McDonald, I believe. I'm sure Jewel Woodard and probably Edna McDonald has been with it as long as I have.
Are there any other types of arts or crafts that you do that were things that you learned from your childhood that were passed down in your family?
I can't think of anything right now. We didn't have much time as children for, you know, that type of thing, and not living in close to, we lived out on the farm, and not living in close to an area where people would gather to do such things as that. And my mother wasn't too much, I think she crocheted a little bit, but she didn't have time for things like that, with raising a family of 8 children and working on the farm where we did our own, you know, canning and taking care of, growing our own meats and vegetables and taking care of them, preparing them, you know, for winter season.
Did Do you do any of that anymore? Any canning?
Oh, yes. In fact, we have just had our present preacher to ask for, he says, a case of, we call them sweet lime pickles, cucumber pickles, that that I make. And, well, there are three of us in the area here that use the same recipe and make a good many of them. And his daughter had eaten some of the pickles at his house or some gathering we were having here, and she has in her order for some of our pickles. And I do a good bit of canning right on, even though I would say most of it is freezing, but I do a lot of canning right on. Fig preserves, my fig preserves, not saying this boastfully, but my fig preserves are very much in demand. I know that if I want to give somebody something that they really appreciate, give them a jar of my fig preserves. And I've been doing that through the years.
Where did you learn that?
From my mother.
What exactly do you do with figs in the preparation of?
Well, you wash them, you stem them, and then you fix your syrup. You know, whatever. We used to use just pure cane syrup because my dad grew his own cane and had his own mill and all and made his own syrup. So we used cane syrup mostly. But now I use sugar most altogether. And the newest recipe I'm using soaks them in soda water after they're washed and stemmed. Soak them in soda water, and then put them on and boil them for about 10 minutes, and then drain them off and have your syrup hot, ready to put them in while they're hot and your syrup is hot, and cook them for, till the syrup gets to, no, I believe it's about 30 minutes. You cook them for about 30 minutes. And I guess they intend for you to do that in the middle of the day because they said soak them, let them soak in the syrup overnight and then finish cooking them to the consistency that you want them in the next morning and then pack them and seal them.
Is that the way your mother prepared them?
No, that isn't the way my mother prepared them. We just, as I said, stemmed them, washed them and stemmed them, and then fixed the syrup and put them in it and just cooked them until, slowly, until, you know, they were of the right consistency. Some people like them with thick syrup and some like them, you know, with it thinner. So we just cooked it to the consistency that we liked it.
Your special pickle recipe, is that something that you've had for a long time?
No, it isn't. It's something that I believe, I'm not sure now, but I believe we got that recipe off of a package of lime for, you know, pickling lime. I know there's one on there that's very similar to it, if that isn't where we got it. I'm not sure now that we got it off there. But I have helped pickle through the years because with a large family and with growing the gardens, that my father had, we just canned a lot. We didn't have freezer back then, you know, to take care of stuff. So we did a lot of canning, and we pickled cucumbers largely. That was mostly our pickles. Of course, we did some peach and pear pickles. Of course, most people now call them spiced peaches, you know, or spiced pears, but they were pickles when we made them back then. And we had our own peach trees, our own pear trees, and grew our own cucumbers and the other things, you know, that we used for pickling, as well as other ways of canning. Another thing that we have done through the years is jelly making. On the farm where my mother was reared, they had a pond not far from the house that had mayhaw bushes. Have you ever seen or heard
no,
of mayhaws? Well, they are similar to, I guess more similar to a plum, except they're not anything like as large. And they look a whole lot like a miniature apple, except they, most of the time, they're not much larger than the end of my thumb like this. And they have the odor of an apple more than anything else. But they make a delicious jelly.
Oh. Let me switch this tape over. This is the end of side one.